Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started.
Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. I heard a new term this week, enshittification, as in the entire population is witnessing the enshittification of everything. Politics, education, culture, morals, the corruption, the degradation of our cities. People all over the country have immense battle fatigue right now. We're tired of being punched in the face at every turn. Politicians who only watch out for themselves or carry a globalist anti-America agenda, the government schooling that dumbs down our kids or turns them into weak transgenderists, the cities that look like shit, at least all the liberal ones do, and people are just fucking tired. I live here in Seattle and I recently just bought a new house in the central part of the state to be far away from the drug addiction, homelessness, garbage and graffiti, and all the mental illness that so many of our citizens have here. One of the great goals of the Marxist globalist agenda is to utterly demoralize humans and get them more and more dependent on the state. And as far as I can see, they've done a really effective job on both of these fronts, and it's downright depressing. I don't mean to hit such a bummer note this week, but good Americans and good Christians seem to be over it, don't they? Even liberals look weak and defeated. I would say the consensus morale at this point is bruised and bloody and sick of being ruled over by globalist pedophile satanic elites who hate us. Pretty much sums up the trenches, doesn't it? Okay, thanks for that rant. On to a better note before we get to our excellent guest. I have a couple quotes from you before we get to today's interview. One is from the Hodge twins who posted, quote, "A school in Washington State allegedly transitioned a girl without her parents' knowledge or consent. They reportedly encouraged her to identify as a boy, roomed her with boys on school trips, gave her a secret burner phone, and even pushed her to live with another family. Thankfully, her parents found out, immediately removed her from the school, moved out of state, and got her away from the situation. She is now reportedly thriving. This case highlights a growing and deeply disturbing problem. Schools and staff actively working to undermine parental authority and push gender ideology on children in secrets. Parents are being treated as obstacles instead of the primary decision makers in their child's life," unquote. Yeah, man, I'm seeing it. And also from Dr. Paul McHugh, who is a professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, who says, quote, "Transgenderism is the only mental illness demanding that the rest of society adopt the patient's delusion as part of the patient's treatment," unquote. Oh, man, but you can't criticize the transgender narrative. That means you're an awful and hateful person, right? My guest today is a military veteran and a podcaster, and the conversation gets into some great topics: the infestation of DEI in the military, the long march of Marxism through our institutions and culture, and the attack on Christians and their values throughout the past few decades. But before we get to that, let's hear from our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. Something for everyone, base campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Dr. Chase Spears. Dr. Spears is a combat veteran who served as a U.S. public affairs officer for 20 years. He holds a Ph.D. in leadership communication from Kansas State University and is passionate about holding the military accountable to its constitutional purpose. Chase is widely published in Civil Military Matters and is the creator and host of the podcast Finding Your Spine. Here is my interview with Dr. Chase Spears. All right, I am here with Chase Spears, husband and father, veteran and patriot. Chase Spears. Chase, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, Tony. It's just a joy to be with you. I really appreciate the invitation, and I'm excited about digging into some of these things that we both care so much about together.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been really excited to talk to you, Chase. Before we get to like the meat and the questions and stuff, maybe just give us a little bit of a background so our listeners know where you're from, like where you grew up, maybe how long you were in the military and in what capacity, and how big your family is and where you reside now.
Oh, man, all the things. All the things. I'm husband to my college sweetheart, father of five amazing kiddos. Mm-hmm. We currently reside in the greater Kansas City, Missouri area, though I'm originally from Florida. But as you probably are are accustomed to, and you're dealing with military people don't really have a home. And so we moved around a whole bunch of different places, and we ended up retiring from the Army roughly 2.5 years ago out of Fort Leavenworth, which is up in Northeast Kansas. And so that's about 20 minutes up the road from where we currently hang our hats. And it's not necessarily where I think I'll spend the rest of my life, but it's a good place to be right now. And we don't have any reason to up and, you know, run off to another location at the moment. So that's where we're hanging our hats at. You know, 5 amazing kids, really wide age range. We've got all the way from 5-year-old all the way up to 23. My oldest 2 boys, 3 youngest are girls. My 2 boys are grown, and one's actually deployed right now. He's in the National Guard, so he's over getting his war stories, and we're very much looking forward to him coming back and me and him sitting down, just kind of swapping stories and me reliving my old days through his current ones. And so aspiring scholar, writer, thinker, antagonizer, noisemaker, and podcaster is what I'm doing these days.
Love it. Love it. Love it. You know, one thing that we noticed that civilians noticed during COVID that was really disturbing, because, you know, I live in Seattle. It's this hopelessly woke area of the country. I mean, I grew up in the area. It's just gotten so leftist here. But we started seeing that the DEI woke stuff was in the military, you know, and it was, for me, it was jarring, because I thought that would be the last place that they would ever get a foothold. But under Obama and Biden, you were seeing generals, you know, talking about DEI hires. And it was just for the public, like myself, it was mortifying, because you're like, this has got to be terrible for military. Like you can't get away from meritocracy in the military. You have to have good candidates. You have to have good training. You can't lower the bar. That's, you know, and so the first thing I wanted to ask you, because you were in the military during this time, is what did that do inside the military? What was that like, the morale of the troops as maybe the DEI was being rolled out? Did you see it, you know, kind of like just starting, or were you in there right in the middle of it? Or, you know, how did that all unfold?
Well, Tony, I lived really kind of the full life cycle of it because of the timeline that I was in. I joined in 03. I retired in 23. So I was right at 20 years and 8 days, not that I was counting. And we planned to actually do a longer career. I loved soldiering. I loved being a public affairs officer. I was really good at that job. And I don't say that with any arrogance. I just was. It was like the job that God had custom designed me to do. And we thought, we'll go ahead and do 30 years just because I'm good at it. I enjoy it. I enjoy being a soldier. I especially enjoyed the airborne lifestyle. I was looking forward to hopefully getting back to that part of the Army in my last few years. But the institution that I left in 2023 looks absolutely nothing like the one that I joined in 03. And so you really pegged it on those two names, Obama and Biden, as to when it really started to flood the force. And let me give a little bit of historical context. There's this wonderful book written by a man named Samuel Huntington, who's just one of the most brilliant minds of the recent century. And he wrote a lot of stuff, including Clash of Civilizations. But the work that stands out to me is The Soldier and the State, which he wrote in the 1950s about how do we identify the military in this post-World War II era, where we no longer basically disbanded after wars, but we've decided we're going to keep this permanent, large-standing thing. And part of that argument was a model of what he called objective civilian control, which is where the idea for the so-called, and I'm using air quotes here, apolitical force comes from.
Sure.
And let me be clear, there is no such thing as an apolitical anything. So that's just a figment of most people's imaginations. But within that book, he said something that really got a hold of me. And he said, militaries must remain conservative. And he didn't mean that from an ideological perspective or a social warfare perspective or any of these, you know, a Fox News perspective. He meant it from the perspective of, you have the national founding values and the things that make us Americans versus making us Western Europeans, pawned removed. And in order to defend those things, you have to love those things. And thus, you must want to conserve those things. And so thus, a military must be naturally conservative because it is trying to preserve, defend, protect, and perpetuate the American values that we rely on. And the military, it's a large institution, and it had fallen prey to a lot of social progressivism over the years as part of the progressives' long march through the institutions, as Gramsci noted. But it was really kind of the last lone fortress that progressives had not completely taken over. And Barack Obama, say what you will about him, and what I think about him includes that he needs his own level of hell in Dante's Inferno. But to his great credit, he's a master strategist. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
And he understood that in order to carry about what he called the fundamental transformation of the United States, he needed the military on board, as every revolutionary in the last century has demonstrated. In order to create a revolution, you need the military on board, because if the military is not partnered with you, the military will be a blocking force against you. And he understood that. And so Barack Obama prioritized taking over the military, relieving, retiring, firing, sending out to pasture enough of the senior general officers who held to the basic conservative value, and making it very clear that if you wanted promotion to those ranks, you needed to be on board with his social agenda. And there were plenty enough careerists who were willing to do that. Mm-hmm. And so this happens back in, this is 2010 when it really starts to stand out. And the linchpin of it was the overturn of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was when the floodgates opened to not to just open homosexuality in the force, which was bad enough, but it activated the activists who were already in the ranks in hiding. One, it did that.
Yep.
Two, it encouraged people who would otherwise have had no aptitude for military service, because they are of activist revolutionary mindset, encouraged them to now decide they want to come in. Mm-hmm. And then three, it took the people in the ranks who don't really hold to any particular moral commitment. The people who stick their finger in the air and see which way the wind blows. Well, they saw which way the wind blows and they got on board with it.
Yep.
And so fast forward, this was back 2010. By the time you get 10 years later, those people are the ones who have sat on the promotion boards and who have groomed their successors. And so by 2020, it was done. It was done. And you had Donald Trump in office by that point in time. But I remember even I was on a tour in Washington, D.C. as a graduate fellow at Georgetown University. And I remember one day standing on, I think I was at the Eisenhower Metro stop there in Alexandria, Virginia, waiting for a train to go into the Pentagon. And I was reading a news story about how Pentagon officials were actively blocking Trump and saying, we don't obey things based on what the president puts on Twitter. We obey orders. And I thought, well, you wouldn't have said that about Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the military, by the time I got out, was fully invested with this stuff, Tony. It was hostile to Christian worldview. There were training seminars that actively singled out pro-lifers, Christians, people who read the great works as terrorist threats, as examples of potential extremists. There, when you drove on base, there were what I call the bail flags, the LGBTQ plus IA .. flags on base. Yep. There were BLM flags on base.
Wow.
On base.
Yeah.
There are pride displays in the commissary. The base libraries across the force are still, to this moment in time, are still filled with pornographic works in children's sections.
Ugh.
And base commanders will do nothing about it because they are afraid of the ALA. And so it was just, it was a very hostile place for Christian thought. And when you point that out to the progressives, they shoot back and say, oh, but you guys have chaplains.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the chaplains, the truly faithful chaplains, they're hamstrung. And so I realize I'm kind of going long there. I'll pause for breath and let you hop in here. But it was fully infested, Tony, and so few civilians realize it. And that's a problem that gets to a deeper issue of civilians being completely ignorant and hands off when it comes to their military. And that historically is a very dangerous thing.
Yeah. You know, One thing that we saw, I think everybody, and maybe this was naive of people, like when Trump assigned Secretary Hegseth, and he came out strongly for conservative, you know, values, and was like, we're gonna flush this woke stuff. But I don't know. It sounds like it's difficult to change culture in the snap of a finger. Like you just described a 20-year march that is just kind of a nightmare for the military. Like it's embarrassing to be flying flags that are the American flag from bases. Like what is the heck's going on? He seems like a stand for American values, but how much is that is memes that we're all cheering as conservatives and Christians and Americans, and how much is being implemented? Sometimes I'm not quite sure. Just because I see a meme that pleases me doesn't mean that the culture is being starting to be U-turned or pendulum back the other way. But I hope it is. I hope this means there's a shift, because, you know, it can't go much further to the left. If it does, I mean, we're sunk. We're just not going to have good soldiers that feel safe with conservative values in the military, which is just asinine to me.
Culture is hard to shift.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the progressives, they understood that. That's why Gramsci called it the long march through the institutions, not the quick march through the institutions, the long march through the institutions. And I don't think conservatives understand that. Progressives have mastered that. Revolutionaries have honed this craft over centuries. They have honed this craft through the violent overthrow of multiple nation states and within the lifetimes of our parents and grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And conservatives tend to think, oh, if we just won an election, it's all okay. No, it's not all okay. It's like in a military battle. You may win a battle, but unless you have absolutely killed every last one of your foe, mm-hmm. every member of the unit that you were fighting against, every member of that battalion, brigade, division, or corps, unless like you have successfully mowed the landscape and there's not a single one left standing, your enemy retreats,
regroups, yep.
and reforms and prepares for the next offensive.
Yeah.
And that's part of our doctrine as well, is calculating if you're at what level of casualties do you pull back so you can reform the ranks and prepare for a reassault. We call that going into the defense, and mm-hmm. and progressives understand that well. And Antonia, I've been so frustrated. So many times I'd go to conservative intellectual conferences, because I just kind of enjoy those environments. They're part of my ongoing learning.
Mm-hmm.
And people would find out I'm a veteran. And of course you get the social prayer of thank you for your service, which they don't really mean, but it makes them feel better. And I nod and don't tell them how full of crap I think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, oh, isn't it great? Hegseth fixed everything. And I'm like, no, it's not great. And no, Hegseth hasn't fixed everything. And yes, Hegseth is a great American, great patriot, a great brother in the Lord.
Yeah.
He'll probably never talk to me in this lifetime, but you know, we'll have eternity in heaven I'm sure once in a while I get to ask him a question or two. You know, he's a great man. But making a cool video and signing a memorandum does not change culture.
Yeah.
And the problem is, the ranks are still infested with people at all levels, top to bottom, who have been part of that 20-year march and who are hostile to what the administration wants to do to restore and reform the military to its mm-hmm. constitutional purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't seem to get that. And I have, you know, I'm nobody, but I do know some people who are close to somebody's. And so I've had many conversations with people in top levels of the Pentagon, people who do have face-to-face time occasionally with the Secretary of War. And I don't know if they've ever carried these messages to him or not, but I've shared the messages with them that, look, guys, you don't understand how surrounded you are. Mm-hmm. And if you allow hostile actors who hate you to stay in the top policy directing offices, then all Pete's doing is making really great videos and signing really cool memos. But the moment he's out, whether that be at the end of Donald Trump's term or mm-hmm. whether it be sooner, that can all be reverted.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you, personnel is policy. Martin Blackwell said that his rules for leadership, personnel is policy.
Mm-hmm.
And if y'all don't get after major, major, major turnovers in personnel, you're going to have these people just waiting you out. And we've seen that. I track this pretty closely. there's been a lot of what we call malicious compliance offices doing the bare minimum of what they have to do, or deliberately going way overboard with a policy change so that it can then get leaked and turned into an embarrassing news item. And that's all very deliberate as well. That's all strategic.
Yeah. So, I think there's a, there's this sense, and you're pointing on it exactly, is that all the MAGA patriots think that we've got a chance to change the culture in so many different ways. But what you're pointing to is like, it was, it's been a 20-year march. If you're going to keep all the same actors in there, if you haven't had a way to flush the primary policymakers and such out, then the left can wait you out. And right now I'm sensing they're just waiting for Trump to get out before they can hopefully, in their eyes, take over and reassert the globalism that they've been after for a long time. You know, one of the things that you said is you've said that you're a stand for constitutional training for military reform. I think this is a fantastic idea. My question is, like, what kind of constitutional training does military have? I'm going to tell you right now, Chase, like, it's mortifying that they don't teach any civics in public schools where I'm at all. They've replaced it all with ideology and transgender and Marxism and cultural Marxism. It's all, you know, the test scores are down on essential skills like reading and writing, and they've just blasted the kids with leftist ideology and virtue signaling and all that stuff. And they don't get any civics. They don't get anything to be proud about around our nation, which is really disturbing. Like, you know, I grew up, you know, in the 70s and 80s, and I mean, you did this, you know, Pledge of Allegiance, and you learned civics. You learned what our country did well and mistakes we made, but it wasn't all about shaming the country. Like, we're this terrible, terrible thing. Like, kids grew up really proud of being Americans and knew about American exceptionalism. And they're not getting that now. They're like, we should have our tail between our legs all the time, is how they're coming out of school. And it's, I mean, it reminds me of the Malcolm X, never let your enemies educate your children. And we have let our enemies educate our children. And what they've done is dumb them down. They have no civics and they have no pride in their nation, and which is such a shame, because America's such an exceptional experiment.
Yeah. And that's by design. Yeah. It's absolutely by design. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say, oh, it's just gotten bad very recently. Mm-hmm. The government school system, I don't call them public schools, because they're certainly not open to the public.
No,
we get to pay for them, and we don't really get to go use them. Mm-hmm. They're government schools, they're government educational systems, and they are by design, again, by design, aimed at separating children from the national values, from their religious values, from their cultural values, mm-hmm. from their parental values. And that's not me with the tinfoil hat on saying it. That's the words of the fathers of the modern governmental education system. John Dewey, who is the led the Teachers College at Columbia University, which is where really the teaching profession, if you will, K through 12 came from. He said it. President Woodrow Wilson, before he was president, when he was a progressive intellectual at Princeton, said similar things, that the purpose of a public education is to separate children from the, his words, not mine, prejudices of their parents.
Mm.
This is another long, long,
long thing. Play, just, long play,
long, long play. Right. And so a lot of parents had just began waking up to it when their kids were home during COVID, and they start seeing some of this stuff. And to my question was, well, where were you before? And I am fiercely unrelenting on that, you know, Christian parents have no business sending their kids to the government schools, that God gives us that responsibility and it should not be handed off to the state. But yeah, the schools are, they're terrible. And we see the lack of civics there is deliberate. The lack of history there is deliberate. And we see the same thing in the military. And to your question about what kind of constitutional and civic training do we get in the military, next to none, next to none. There is no constitutional training required for enlisted military members. I was enlisted and I was commissioned as an officer. For officers, If you go to West Point, there is a block of instruction about the Constitution in an ethics course. And if you are commissioned through ROTC, just within the last few years, there was a piece of legislation pushed through by Ted Cruz and, God, I'm forgetting the name of the other senator. It was him and a Democrat senator introduced this bill, and it passed. And it required a block in constitutional training for all newly assessed officers, whether you be ROTC or West Point. I don't think it's required for officer candidate school, much like myself. And but I mean, it's a one-time short thing. I did 20 years in the Army, and I remember one block of constitutional training, and it was on Constitution Day, and it was like a 10-minute online video I had to watch, and then send an email said I watched the video, and it was a good video. But again, think about that once in 20 years versus every single year I had to attend equal opportunity trainings, and it was tracked closely.
Yeah,
man, if I missed that, somebody came looking for me.
Yeah.
In equal opportunity training, there's a little bit of good in it, but it's a training that was long ago, even before Obama was co-opted by the Marxists, is kind of a training to make you program towards thinking in progressive ways. And then we had all the LGBTQ plus trainings that got added in. And then we had the EO trainings. And then we had these SHARP trainings, the sexual assault awareness trainings, which again were basically just struggle sessions.
Yeah.
We had to attend those every single year. If you missed one of those, man, someone came looking for you. It was reportable, but nothing on constitutional training. And yet the Constitution is what we swore an oath to.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that ironic that we would not focus on understanding what we're supposed to be defending? And it's obvious why. Again, this goes back to the progressive play in public schools. If you don't know what you're actually in defense of, you'll do whatever you are told to do.
Yeah.
And you are a mercenary force.
Yeah, you're totally right. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you, I saw that you had written that it's so important for people of faith, for Christians right now, to kind of work through their own passivity and cowardice in getting involved. I live in a very blue area of the country, and I'm also intimately involved with a small group of patriots that are just fearless, my wife being one of them, and all the people that have raised their hands and talked about the things that you and I just talked about. But there is a lot of good Christians on the sidelines. They just are like, I don't want to do it. It won't make a difference. You know, let somebody else do it. That sounds like a big pain in the butt. And I just wanted to ask you that because it's like part of the reason why we have arrived here in the culture we have in Seattle and Washington State is because really good Christians and really good conservatives have made a choice to sit on their hands, like, let me just be quiet. Let me not raise my voice at the school board meetings. Let me not run for city council of this small town, even though I'm passionate about all these issues or whatever. Like, there's this sense of, let me just be quiet and get along to go along. I don't want anybody yelling at me at the grocery store or whatever. Like, there's just kind of, there's a little bit of cowardice and a little passivity and a little bit like, why me? What would you say to those people that are like, you know, I've said we need more people standing up. We've got a lot of good conservatives in this area, but by and large, most of them are quiet and never say or do anything.
Yeah, I'm so glad you went there. And before I answer that, I want to correct something I realized I said an error a moment ago. It was Rudy Dutschke who coined the term Long March to the Institutions. Gramsci came before him, and I was just thinking about it a minute ago and realized, oops, I mixed up the names again. So for any of the historians listening, I hope I will allay your rage to rest.
Yeah, that's good.
But why do people sit around and not engage? And I see this at my level. I hear this from other people all the time. I mean, this is the genesis for why my podcast is called Finding Your Spine, because I got tired of running across people who would say things along the lines of, we know it's broken, we know it's bad. And then you'd say, well, what are you going to do about it? Oh, well, I don't want to be uncomfortable. Oh, well, I don't want to be unpopular. Oh, well, it might cost me something. Oh, well, it's someone else should stand up. And I got tired of it. And I started telling people, you only need to find your spine. Mm-hmm. Our ancestors crossed the Atlantic under wind power.
Yeah.
And founded this nation on wild land. Like they would horsewhip you for sitting back and being afraid of everything. It's disgusting. It's sickening. It's embarrassing. It's against what God has called us to do, mm-hmm. which is to stand, to continue the stewardship mandate of Genesis 1 and 2, which contrary to a lot of overly pietistic believers, did not end at the time of Christ's ascension. Mm-hmm. If anything, it was reinforced in the Great Commission. And what do you do to get these people activated? Tony, that's what I'm trying to figure out. What do you do? Some of them, in some ways, I've tried shaming. I've tried calling to action. I try writing. I podcast about it. And I think at the end of the day, leadership matters. And that's why I'm so determined to continue talking about great leaders. That's why I love the book of Judges. I'm actually teaching an adult Sunday school course in the book of Judges right now. And you look at just the heroic nature of some of those men, and even a couple of women, Jael, Deborah, who stood up when no one else would and defended a people, a tribe, a group, a nation when no one else would, and were used by God mightily to defeat evil. And that to me is another biblical reminder of why we need good leaders, why we need people to be willing to stand. But I'll tell you, Tony, I have little patience, very little patience with Christians who say things like, I know it's bad right now, so but I don't want to do anything about it. And my question is, you were blessed with this American inheritance. Mm-hmm. Will you be the one who just uses it up and does nothing to pass it down to your children? Will you be the one who lets the flame go out? Will you be part of the generation of shame? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be part of a generation of shame. And that's why I stand. That's why I fight. That's why I walked away from a promotion that I'd wanted for a very long time in the Army. That's why there's a lot of things in life that I do without that would bring me great comfort, that would bring me great professional stature to do what I do, because I believe it's important. And when I'm on my deathbed, whenever that may be, I don't want to look back and say, I didn't try.
Right.
I may not succeed, Tony. I may not move the rock an inch, but I want to know at least I tried.
Absolutely. You know, one thing I'm seeing, Chase, here is the conservatives that are raising their hands and saying, let me get in there, let me lend my life to this cause and stuff. By and large, it's older people. It's people that are over the age of 60, 70 years old. And it's like what we're missing is we're missing the young conservatives that have energy. And I know there's been calls out in churches and such to get the younger conservative voices involved, because it can't just be a lot of 75, 80 year olds leading the charge. You know, we have to have younger people like yourself. And by and large, in the Seattle area, that's what's missing. And that's what everybody's trying to figure out. Like, how do we get the younger conservatives passionate about being leaders, about helping carry this, about helping transform the culture, because they're full of great ideas, and they use social media in ways that the older crowd doesn't. There's a lot of things to the advantage of the younger generation, but it's just hard to get more than one or two of them to get engaged, and that's what everybody's trying to figure out right now.
You know, that's interesting. So a lot of other places that I look, and I admit I'm not familiar with Seattle to the nearly to the level that you are. I do know that it is an extraordinarily difficult place to be the kind of people that we are in that part of the country right now, which is just tragic because it's such a beautiful area. Oh. I used to love visiting and flying in there when I lived in Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, where a lot of the other places I look, it's actually kind of the other way around. It's the younger, really kind of Gen Z and younger millennials getting involved, and you can't and we're and the baby boomers are sitting on the couch saying it's not our problem. And I'm like, well, you kind of handed us this problem, so really you should like pick up the mop while you're still alive. And so I think it may just kind of different geographic regions of the country, different towns, different areas, maybe different populations are stepping in. And I could see why, especially where you're at, it being a much older crowd, probably those who are not worried about W-2 employment anymore. Because I know in like Seattle, like being found out as a conservative is an easy way to get laid off. And so I know that's a factor much more so than it is out here in Kansas where I'm at.
Yeah, you could be quietly ostracized here in a way that you're like, huh, nobody ever asks me if I want a job anymore. it's like, so yeah.
Yeah, kind of like being a 20-year retiree everywhere else in the nation.
Homeschooling kids are going to be the only ones with their heads screwed on straight when all this is over and done with, I swear. It's like, it's not going to be the government propagandized kids. They're not going to know which way the wind is blowing. So good for you for doing that. But listen, we have to get the horse in the barn. I wanted to ask you where people can find you and your work and the podcast, Finding Your Spine. Where do people find that and how can people connect with you? And is there any, programs or anything you want to direct people towards?
Well, thanks so much for asking, Tony,
You
and
bet.
thanks for your long suffering. I know I go long
No,
sometimes.
it's no big deal. I was eyeing the clock and I knew, okay, I gotta get him to the last question here. So yeah, no problem.
Well, if people are interested and would like to know more, the easiest way to connect with me and to connect with my work is at chasespears.com. That's Spears with an EA, chasespears.com. And that's where I link all my social media sites to that. I keep my writings cataloged there, my media appearances cataloged there. There are quick and easy links there to just about everything that I do, whether it be research, scholarship, commentary, interviews, podcast appearances. You can find the links to it there on my website. And if anyone's online, if anyone enjoys doing the social media thing like I do, I'm on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at the handle at Dr. Chase Spears, Dr. Chase Spears. And then one of the projects that I get the most joy at from these days is the Finding Your Spine podcast. And that's a program that I do in partnership with the Herzog Foundation in Smithville, Missouri. And a quick pitch about them that if you're a Christian homeschooler or a Christian K through 12 educator, like as soon as you finish listening to this, you need to go to herzogfoundation.com and check them out because they can help you out in some amazing ways. And so I'm grateful to do that podcast in partnership with them. That's available anywhere you listen to podcasts, and it's also available on YouTube. So you can just look it up on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. If you have any trouble finding it, you can just go to my website, chasespears.com, and click the Finding Your Spine podcast link, and that takes you to everywhere you can find it as well. And it's a lot of fun. And we have conversations a lot like this about how do we get people of moral conviction to stand up in this time and hour and to do something about it.
I love it, Chase. Thank you so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your insight, your wisdom. I love the work you're doing. I love your passion and your principles and just keep it up. And it's with efforts like that that's going to make a difference. And let's just keep the faith and God's got this, but we've got a lot of work to do and we need more people, And so I applaud you and your efforts to do that. And we'll support you in any way we can with the show and the writing. So thank you so much today. We really appreciate your time.
It's a joy. Thanks for so much for what you're doing, Tony. This has been an encouragement for me.
Well, if you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did with Chase Spears, go check out his Finding Your Spine podcast wherever you like to listen to your pods. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week.
you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.